This is what you must remember. The ending of one story is just the beginning of another. This has happened before, after all. People die, old orders pass. New societies are born. When we say the world has ended, it's usually a lie, because the planet is just fine. But this is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. For the last time.
That's the epigraph to N.K. Jemisin's novel, The Fifth Season, the first book in her Broken Earth trilogy. That is one of the best science fiction and fantasy series of the past decade, and it's set in a futuristic world grappling with power, racism, and oppression, with a dash of magic thrown in. As Nora Jemisin told Steve Paulson, the story is rooted in the historical moment we're living in right now.
You know, as a Black woman living in a modern-day American society, of course, I've got lots of questions about validity and exploitation. Black Lives Matter and, I guess, this book were born out of the same frustration or the same anger or the same pain. I was sitting at home and kind of writing parts of this book as I was watching Ferguson unfold on Twitter. And we started to see again and again the names of people who had been extrajudicially murdered. And you start to realize also it's not so much the murders, but it's the fact that those murders then went unpunished.
So you're talking about systemic oppression here, which is one of the themes of these books.
Systemic oppression, yeah. Systemic racism. I drew inspiration from a lot of different oppressive situations. At one point, one of the protagonists has lived her life as a woman in hiding, effectively similar to a closeted queer person. So, yes, systems that are exploitative towards oppressed groups for specific reasons.
Now, you have done a lot of world building in these books. I mean, you have earthquakes and volcanoes that have devastating impacts. There's also magic. Mm. There is this oppressive social order. And I know all this is complicated, but for the uninitiated, can you give us a brief outline of the world that you've created?
Oh, that's going to be fun. All right. Well, basically, it is a world unlike our own. There is a single supercontinent here called the Stillness. Looks a lot like our own world, except periodically, every 200 or 300 years, there is a seismic event powerful enough to kick off something that the locals call a fifth season. That is a seismic winter or some kind of disaster-related worldwide massive phenomenon that often comes paired with famine and the breakdown of society and so on.
So you're talking about sort of extinction-level disasters that regularly happen.
Yes. So this is a world where, in some ways, the apocalypse happens again and again and again. So this is a society where most of the time they're generally sort of democratic and capitalist and so on. But they have a set of rules set up which are designed so that when bad things happen, every community breaks into its own little fiefdom and becomes authoritarian, and they kick out anybody they deem useless.
You also have sorcerers, which you call orogenes. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Who have tremendous powers. Tell me about them. What can they do?
Well, there's a group of people in this world who are born with the natural ability to impact seismic events with their minds.
And, so they can actually trigger earthquakes or volcanoes just by thinking
or
about
stop.
Them.
Okay. Yes. It's really more by feeling. Everyone in this world has kind of a natural ability to sense earthquakes coming. You know, we've seen this in animals in our own world. It's just sort of a little bit of science fiction to extrapolate that maybe we would have the ability to do that too if the planet selected for that ability evolutionarily. But these people go beyond that. Not only can they sense earthquakes coming, they can stop them, they can start them if there are no earthquakes happening. And when they're powerful enough, when they've practiced their skill enough and gotten good enough at it, they can literally just reshape the entire face of the planet, which happens on page 2.
So you've created this really interesting blend of magic and science, which historically has a kind of an interesting history because it's not always clear where you draw the line between magic and, I guess, what we would just call physics.
Well, that's me just kind of having fun. I've been a lifelong science fiction and fantasy fan, and I've watched the endless war between science fiction fans and fantasy fans about, is it magic? Is it science? What's better? And there's a couple of quote-unquote laws in science fiction fantasy-dom. Clark's Law.
Arthur C. Clarke?
Yes, yes, thank you. Any sufficiently advanced science is indistinguishable from magic. And a fantasy fan's corollary of that has always been any sufficiently complexified magic is indistinguishable from science. So with these two in hand, I was like, let's just mix it up. I don't care if it's science or magic. At the end of the day, it's basically the same thing, because when the science consists of technology that is obviously based on a science so far beyond the current people's ability to comprehend, they might as well treat it like giant magic rocks floating through the sky.
Well, I would love to get a sense of what these origins can do, these people who can actually sort of move the earth with their feelings. And you have a passage in your first book in the series, The Fifth Season, that gets at this. Could you read that?
I do, yes. The proto-shakes, even from here, are powerful enough to make her mouth taste of bitter old metal. What? Sienite starts to turn to alabaster, and then she stops in shock, because he is on his hands and knees, growling at the ground. An instant later, she feels it, a shockwave of raw orogeny rippling out and down through the pillars of the high road and into the loose schist of the ground. And before Sien even realizes what's happening, alabaster has grabbed her in some way she's never experienced before. She feels her own connection to the earth, her own orogenic awareness, suddenly co-opted and steered by someone else, and she does not like it one bit. But when she tries to reclaim control of her power, it burns, like friction. Alabaster has chained them together somehow, using her strength to amplify his own, and there's not a damn thing she can do about it. And then they are together, diving into the earth in tandem, spiraling through the massive, boiling well of death that is the hot spot. And before Sienite can think through this, Alabaster does something else. A sharp punch. Something has been pierced somewhere. At once, the upward pressure of the magma bubble begins to ebb. He pulls them back, out of the fire and into the still shuddering earth. And she knows what to do here, because these are just shakes, not Father Earth's rage incarnate. Abruptly, something changes, and his strength is at her disposal. It becomes easy, easy to smooth the ripples and seal the cracks and thicken the broken strata so that a new fault does not form. And as the hot spot settles into just another lurking menace and the danger passes, she comes back to herself to find alabaster curled into a ball in front of her. A scorch-like pattern of frost all around them both, which is already sublimating into vapor.
So you're talking about these people, these origins, who have tremendous power. I mean, how they can sort of shift the earth in dramatic ways. And not everyone likes that. I mean, they're kind of scary figures to people who don't have those powers.
They are valued, provided that they are under control. The society abounds with stories of what happens when origins are allowed to do their own thing and have lives and have children and, you know, basically be people. And no one wants that. If they are not careful, if they are outed and people realize that they are what they are, then lynch mobs form, and they don't usually survive those.
Because they're just considered too dangerous, I mean, by the common people?
It's similar to the way that people reacted to people who had AIDS. You know, the hysterical overreaction, the assumption that just being in the same room, breathing the same air, having them nearby was somehow dangerous. And, you know, they understand in the stillness that orogeny doesn't spread, but they also understand that it's genetic, that orogenes often have children that are orogenes. And so you want to make sure you get that out of your community.
And there's this whole system to keep them under control. I mean, basically, they're removed from their families, from their homes when they're small kids, and stuck in some special place where they're basically held captive, but also sort of trained how to use their powers.
There's always been, in highly oppressive societies, There's always been a place for those who are willing to make themselves useful to the people in charge. And in this particular case, it takes the form of kind of like evil Hogwarts. But so, yes, if they're found as children, and if there's enough time before a mob forms, the people of that village can summon someone called a guardian who will come along and collect the child that has been found to have orogeny. And they'll take that kid off to a training place called the Fulcrum. They can't leave until they're fully trained and highly valuable or highly useful. And then they are let out only to do quick missions. And then they come back home quickly before people get mad that they're there.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking about the fictional world you've created, and there's a backstory mm-hmm. to all of this, which has to do with the industry that you are part of, the genres that you write in. I mean, you've won 2 consecutive Hugo Awards, which is a remarkable achievement, and you're the mm-hmm. first Black woman ever to win 1 Hugo, even. But
For novel,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not everyone in the sci-fi world has been happy with your success. I mean, there's been this conservative backlash. It's complained that the sci-fi world has gotten too political, too ideological. A lot of the criticism at you is quite overtly misogynist and racist. Mm. What do you make of all this?
What we call these days the alt-right, i.e. Nazis, appear to have practiced in certain smaller spheres of life before moving into politics. We've seen variations on this same thing happen in the comic book world and the video game world. It was called Gamergate there. In science fiction fantasy, it's the puppies. I don't know. It's a long story about the puppy name, but this is one of the battlefronts on which they've decided to operate because they've begun to realize that you've got to control ideas. You've got to control people's ability to think about the future if you want them to reshape the present. One of the things that I often talk about as a woman of color in science fiction and fantasy is the fact that until relatively recently, you just didn't see a lot of Black people or Black women, especially, in the future.
Right.
You saw endless iterations of the future that looked a lot like Middle America, full of mostly straight white guys, smattering of women, all young and nubile, and very few of basically anything else.
So we started out by talking about this whole idea of the broken earth, mm-hmm. the title of your trilogy, which raises the question of what can come after the earth is broken. What can replace it? And I don't know, I sort of have this idea that maybe a science fiction writer would be ideally suited to help us imagine a world that is not broken, that is healed. Mm. Do you have a vision of that world?
I'm still working on that. I'm still trying to cobble together that kind of vision. It did occur to me that there's a failing in me. I struggle to envision a society that is truly free of bigotry because that's all I've ever known. And it's such a revolutionary, difficult thought that I'm going to have to try to figure out a way to see past or present into a better future because somebody's got to do it. And there's a lot of people out there that are imagining a much worse future. And so those of us that are tasked with the job of imagining the future have some work ahead of us. But I've struggled to do it now. I don't know that I can imagine that right now.
Nora Jemison, talking with Steve Paulson. She's the science fiction and fantasy columnist for the New York Times Book Review, and she's the author of the multiple award-winning Broken Earth trilogy.